Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 321, my fun chat with podcaster and improviser Fiona Howitt. But first, I thought I'd mention how Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Audible is that app that you've definitely heard about before. You use it to listen to books. You know, my mom used to get CDs from the library and listen to books in the car on her commute to work. This is just like that. Audible is a user-friendly app that connects you with books you want to read and gives them to you in amazingly well-produced audio pieces. When you sign up, you immediately get access to hundreds of books and podcasts automatically available as soon as you start your membership. Then, every month, you get a credit, which you can use to buy something outside the included catalog, like that thriller they just turned into a Netflix movie, or that self-help book you've been wanting to check out. There are tons of books to choose from. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. It's a fun and easy way to entertain yourself during your commute to and from work. And now let me tell you about this week's guest. This week on Yes But Why, I chat with British podcaster Fiona Howitt about all of her favorite things, improv, storytelling, and role-playing games. This was a great chat, and we had so much fun. Check out Fiona's two RPG-related podcasts, What Am I Rolling? And The DM's Book Club. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 321, Fiona Howitt, on finding what makes you happy and doing it. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
Yes But Why.
Yes, but why?
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 This is the Yes, But Why podcast.
The thing that I like to start with to talk to people about is how you played as a child. What were the games that you were playing? Did you have siblings or cousins or friends around that you played with, or did you play by yourself?
So I think the thing I can think of mostly is that I do have a younger sister, but we're 4 years apart. So instantly, any sort of games that we were playing each other would playfully hurt the other one. There's, you know, certain bits, and we'd play lots of imaginary games, you know, dress up, all that sort of thing. But I think for me, the most sort of play stuff I got out of was a mixture of reading lots of books and then acting out the scenes in those books, usually by myself, and usually having an audience of teddies, obviously naturally vocalizing all the best bits. I used to reenact soundtracks, so like the Oliver soundtrack. I remember being very vividly, like, I would act out all the parts of that, again, to no one in particular, and usually by myself. You know, I'd be Faggy at one point and an Artful Dodger at another point. And then I went down the big rabbit hole at like one Christmas. My grandmother, who's sadly passed now, but she got me a PlayStation 1, and then I never looked back. I was always video games, playing those. Like, I remember playing Tomb Raider, and if anyone's ever played Tomb Raider, it's a great game. You know, you've got an amazing lead. It's all about history, and you're shooting bad guys, but there's also mythical stuff. And I couldn't get past the first level because I had no concept of like clues and like escape rooms and puzzles and logic. So I would just wander around looking at the buildings in the really terrible pixel art, essentially. And then eventually I worked out how to use the internet, and I'm like, oh, look, there's like a game FAQs. And I would then cheat, essentially, but play through the games. But it was always just amazing to be like build on this love of like exploring, playing games, finishing them. And certainly going into stuff like Japanese RPGs, so you're thinking of like Final Fantasy, Legend of Dracoon is the one I always remember, because that was over 4 discs. And I just remember playing out these stories and getting really involved in characters. And certainly the Legend of Dracoon one is the one I always remember, because it was definitely like a knockoff of some sort of Japanese anime or something like that. But one of the characters at the end of the first disc, minor spoilers, you know, 30-year-old game, dies. And I cried. I trained him up. I did all the grinding stuff. I was like, oh yeah, his dragoon is the best. And then he he sacrificed himself, and his the gem spirit or whatever went on to another character who took on all their stats. And I was just sat there going, that's not what I chose. I want him back. And then later on, you get him back in a side quest, but it's a, you know, always sort of thing. And I just made me fall in love with the idea of stories and being a part of being a storyteller, because ultimately that's for me is the biggest thing, is that if you tell a good story, if you're a part of a good story, whether it's just you telling it to an audience and there's no interaction, or if you're part of like role-playing games, which is now my big sort of obsession, and creating a very unique thing where, you know, you're the adventurers and you beat the bad person, but also at the same time you're inept and you're just dealing with your own flaws and stuff like that, but you can do stuff and think outside the box and make these incredible characters, which you will never see again, and having that connection with somebody else, it just is incredible. And I always come back to that idea of like wanting to perform as a kid and wanting to try out these things and realizing that I can have impact on these stories in some way, whether it's through like playing through buttons or reading them and then creating the scenes in my head and acting them out loud, essentially. So that all of that, all the games of the place have really told me that if I want to be a good storyteller, you need to have all this, not information, but inspiration from places and gain it. And then it doesn't matter whether you're retelling the same story, as long as, you know, you treat it with respect and sensitivity and stuff, but you could also create your own stories and somebody out there might listen, which is just like mind blowing to me even now.
Yeah. I love the idea that you developed the storytelling ideas from the video games, because I'm not quite a video game kind of person. Huh. I was just slightly too old, I think, for getting into that. I'm more of a basic car driver kind of game situation, very simple. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate what you're saying initially about Tomb Raider, where it took you a second to like get into the puzzles and like understand that it wasn't just about looking around, because I always think that too. Whenever somebody like makes me play, they're like, check this out. I'm always just like, oh, look at this, seems cool. Can we check it out? They're like, no, we've got to move forward. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. sure. Like, okay. Oh, there's an effort? Okay. But like, I like that you spent all this time exploring it and like getting into the world and like looking around. And also that, you know, I always think about the I used to be dumbfounded by the idea that people would watch other people play video games on YouTube. I was watching my nephew watch this person play a video game, and I just was like, hey, buddy, I need to know, why are we watching this? What is it about this that you are interested in? And he blew my mind when he was like, well, this person has a lot of points and a lot of money, so they're able to unlock rooms and spaces in this game that I can't, because I don't have a lot of points and a lot of money. So I get to see parts of the game that I don't usually get to see through watching them. And also he'll teach me ways to get there without requiring this, that, or the other. And so then he's essentially showing me how to use the game better. And I was like,
that's so fascinating.
And this kid literally is like 8 years old, by the way, telling me this. Like, my jaw hit the ground. I was like, finally, I understand what you guys are doing. I just thought it was weird and like this voyeuristic situation of watching another person do something, which, you know, I get. But at the same time, like the unwrapping videos where you're like, why? I don't get that gift. Why is it fun to watch them unwrap it? But like, I appreciate that from the voyeuristic point of view. So I thought that's what this was. But like, to find out and then now to bring it back into your using it that way, that like you can use every resource around to get better at this game, to like learn how it works, because like it doesn't, not all of them, some of them give you tutorials as you go through where it's like press this and you can do that, but you know, that's not usually the kind of thing you're looking to do if you're going through this exploration adventure game. You don't want it to tell you what to do, you want to figure it out. So exactly. It's just really fascinating, and that was the way that you got into storytelling. Also, I feel like video games get a bad name, clearly, for me as well. But like, as far as like creating a bad scenario, like that they're hurting the people that are playing them, whereas it sounds to me like it really just scratched the creative itch that you had and helped you understand storytelling in this like wide world building like scenario. Like,
Yeah.
I recently too was in a writing class with a younger student who was like, he told us that he was really into building the worlds of video games, and that like he wanted to take the writing class to develop the ability to write out these whole worlds, and then he and his friends were going to turn them into video games, but he really wanted to develop the whole thing first, and he didn't quite know how to do it, so that's why he took this writing class to like
that's so cool.
And I was like, dude, yes, like amazing. And it opened my mind to like just more ways that creatives can use their skills and like can put it out there. It's not like your creative bit isn't good because it doesn't fit into this box or that box. You can find a brand new thing, like creating a video game. And then there's multiple choices. There's like so many. You don't have to make, you know, some people are like, I can't write a novel because then I gotta make a lot of decisions. Turns out in these games, you can give the character the option to make 45 decisions, like,
yeah,
and that's amazing. That's so wild. Now, as far as your creation has gone as a storyteller, are is this what led you? I know that you're you do a lot of RPG and Dungeons and Dragons. Was it this kind of storytelling that led you into that world, or did you write in a different way and get into it in a different manner? How did that develop for you?
Well, and that is a really interesting question, because I think I got to a certain stage and then I went to university. Like we were talking before about that 18-year cycle thing. And I think as soon as I got to university, I was like, oh, I'm not cool. And hid everything. Like, but possibly. It's interesting. When I interview people on my podcast, asking them like what RPGs did they get into? And they always had that bit as a kid, like getting into it. Like for me, unfortunately, I didn't know anything about RPGs or role-playing games or anything like that until much later on.
Yeah.
And I didn't do anything. I didn't even do sports stuff. I just because I was like, for me, the most important thing in that time was like, okay, I need to have friends and pass my exams. And it was just that focus on like, need to get to the end. And then once I've got my degree, I'll get a job and I'll get to the end and I'll be okay. And I had such a good time. I enjoyed my university stuff. I think it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. But when I finished it and then finally moved to London, where I am now, almost 10 years later, I was like, oh, what do I do? Because suddenly all the people I'd made friends with, this is again before the big sort of explosion of sort of Facebook had just sort of come out of social media stuff, but it wasn't the same instant connection that we have now. So I was like, what am I going to do? Newly single in London, I didn't know what to do. So I was like, well, what are my interests? And it was usually lots of nerdy stuff. I joined the Doctor Who Society at a university, so it's great. And I have all these sort of these interests, and I was like, well, I now need to go and that's one of my biggest fears has always been having to restart from scratch, back to square one. So obviously being in a new, and this happens to everyone I know, but going to, you know, even a new town, new state, a new country, you have to start from scratch and not have that support network. So I go to London and I'm like, well, I'm going to search into Facebook and see what there's there. And there was a Quidditch team. It's now called Quadball even, because they've had a big name change. They said, oh, we're going to have a practice. Does someone want to come to my house and pick up the equipment? And I was like, oh, I'll come. And I traveled like half an hour and I got to this person's house and I knocked on the door and I was like, I actually don't know this person. I don't know anything about them. And I've just turned up at their house. I could die as a general sort of safety thing. But then I never looked back. I never looked back. And that's what I've done every time I've gone to a new hobby or trying something new. I'm like, I don't do it, I won't know if it's something good. If I do it and I hate it, I'll be like, you never guess what I did. I played Quidditch, but it's now called Quadball, you know, all that sort of thing. But it went from, I played Quidditch, Quadball now for about 5 years, and I played in different teams. I helped set up another team, and it was a way to make friends. And I realized, because obviously this is when I graduated uni, a lot of those people who were playing this sport were different ages and stuff. So we had the same interest, but we're still struggling with like, okay, we're now moving, we're leaving the university bit, but now we're in a big city. Well, we're going to still be with our friends because we're going to play this sport. And then from there, I started playing other sports. I started playing sort of, there was like those community teams of like adult dodgeball and basketball, and sort of, just to try it out. And let me tell you, Amy, I'm not a sporty person, never have been really. I tried I was terrible. I cannot dribble a ball to save my life, but I'm tall and I can stop people getting things in the hoops and stuff. And then like tag rugby and the touch rugby, all that sort of thing. I could have a go. And again, I've stopped doing it now more recently. Again, COVID stuff happened, and also there's, as all with all communities, all sporting stuff, people take it too seriously and stuff. But I was like, yeah. I've done it. Had a go. I've got some medals. I've done all right. Great. But then from actually having a go at stuff, somebody then said to me, hey, do you want to try Dungeons and Dragons? And I just remember back from like these fantasy stuff, seeing people talking about it, you know, seeing it in films. I thought, why don't I have a go? Like, it's something that I probably will like, but if I'd never done it. So I was really scared. I was really nervous about trying it out. And then as soon as I tried it out, we had a session and I was like, I love this. I want to run this. I was like, I appreciate what this person did. I'm going to start running it. So I started buying the books and I started, and this is when Kickstarter was a big thing as well. So all these zines, all these PDFs of new RPGs coming out. So I was just buying them or supporting them. And then I just had a huge to read list, to read book pile. and I was like, oh no, I'm never going to get through this. And I was like, well, what am I going to do? Because, you know, and I was like, wait, I want to make friends, or I want to meet up with my friends and do that support thing. I want to run these games. I also want to get better at my job and do some audio stuff and just trying stuff out. Why don't I do podcasting and start making these little one-off sessions, little stories, and get people to connect and try new things? And that has been basically my life for the last 4 or 5 years, is running these games and just getting as many people, like, you know, and it doesn't have to, you don't have to be smart, witty or clever, like that's a big improv thing, I know. But even if they're like, oh, there's lots of rules, I'm like, don't worry, I've made a cheat sheet because I don't know all the rules either. And it's great. It's just getting people involved to just have a go. So weirdly, sport helped me just like give it a go. And then I'm like, I'll just give it a go. And I will help other people give it a go as a result.
Yeah. I love the idea that you got to Dungeons and Dragons and were like, yeah, I'd like to run this now. Like,
yes. Yeah, this is my thing. You're like, thank you. Oh. Yes.
Oh, I see. I'm going to be in charge. I really appreciate that.
I'm you can leave now. It's the dice, those books. Fine now, yes.
All of it? Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Get out.
Bye.
Yes. No, I love it because it's such a, you know, you found this thing that you wanted to have ownership over, and I appreciate it. And I also appreciate how ownership over these kinds of games is so loose. Like, it's not even like you truly have ownership. It's just like, oh, I just want to know everything about this. I want to seep myself into this world. And and also, like, I'm pretty sure the way that you developed your podcast to learn all these games and play all these games is like also how book clubs are born. People are like, I want to read this book, but I'm not going to do it on my own. What if I could get a couple of my friends and we all sort of like bug each other about getting it done? Like in the same way that you're like, I want to learn how to play this game, but the only way that I'm going to do it is if I like make myself beholden to these guests that I'm going to have and like have them, oh, I've got to get it done for John. Like if I don't get this all organized, what's going to happen when he comes over and we're, you know, there's gonna be nothing prepared, you know. I feel like that's so much like, and to the same point where podcasting becomes like a social thing. Legit, this is how I meet people. This is my social hour. I mean, like real talk, audience. Fiona and I talked for an hour and 15 minutes before we hit go on this thing. Like that's how we're like making friends, you know. And that's what I love actually about this because. I get to connect with people and we're all over and we get to connect on this one thing that we're both interested in and then move on in our lives. And I like the idea that that's your setup as well. Now, did you have, clearly based on the job that you told me that you have earlier, like you have technical prowess in some way. So you had already, how'd you know about podcasting? How did you like get into that? That seems like we've talked about sports and storytelling, but like now you're like, by the way, I also know how to do audio recording and all this. And it's like, Whoa, okay. I thought that was going to come in somewhere where it was like, we were doing a lot of games at my house and then the pandemic hit and we were like, we can't hang out, so now it's going to be Zoom. But no, like, you were already like, I'm going to turn this into a podcast. How did, where did you get that knowledge and like, how did you decide to put those together?
Yeah, so again, it was an interesting thing because for my work, most of what I do is I create content, but for the academics. So basically, it would be stuff like a voice of a PowerPoint. It would be like a welcome video and stuff. And not to name and shame or anything like that, but academics at times are really bad at doing welcome videos.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard, right? So like right now, I'm staring into the camera. I'm just talking away, being very relaxed because I can do that. But if I was a script, I'd have to learn it and then say it to it. We don't have a teleprompter because it's a bit expensive, and also B doesn't really help if they don't know what they're saying. And also they'll just write down what they want to say, and it's important to get all these points in. It'll be usually 3 pages long, and also it'll be very lots of technical jargon and all that sort of thing. And it'll be terrible because obviously they'll be there squinting because they don't have their glasses on, and they're not looking into the camera, and it's a nightmare. And so, and also then once we'd filmed it, they'd be like, I'd be like, can we watch it back and see how you felt about it? I can't watch it back. I don't like looking at myself. And so I was like, maybe an easier thing to do would be to just do audio. And I was trying to put it across to my work that audio is so good because like podcasts were on the rise. You know, I listened to several as I was going to work. You know, like I think for me, the biggest one going back to that storytelling thing was like Welcome to Night Vale, this idea of this random community radio in the middle of nowhere, which is, you know, Twin Peaks inspired, very weird, but enjoyable. And also had music in it and was beautifully soundscaped and stuff. So I was like, we should do more about this at work, and I'd love to know more about it. And of course, work were like, sure, whatever. And then I saw there was a podcast workshop, and I was like, well, I'm going to go train myself. You know, I thought, I'll go do it. And I sat down in this workshop with other people. And the guy there, I remember his name, Mark, he'd done various podcasts. And of course, I can't remember any of them behind mine because I didn't listen to them in the end. But he was just like, all you need is an idea, and it doesn't matter if everyone has done that idea, because you're the thing that makes it different. And I was like, that's so true. Because again, I did a quick look and they like, well, I'm into role-playing games. Let's see what is out there. And let me tell you, I mean, there are so many Dungeons & Dragons games out there. So many actual plays. And they're all run by the same 4 stereotype men in a basement, terrible audio. They always do a session zero where they're like, this character's hilarious because he does puns and it's all about various body parts. And you're like, God, I'm not listening to... How many episodes have we done? 70? I'm not listening to that. And it's, you know, because everyone's getting going. So I sat and I thought, well, I don't have to just do Dungeons & Dragons. That's the big thing. And it still is the most popular, world's greatest role-playing game. But actually, there are so many other role-playing games out there, so many different ways to tell stories that don't rely on having lots of dice. It could just be tokens. It could just be conversation. It could be just cards. And I was like, there must be a way to showcase different systems of telling stories just through audio only. So I decided to sit down, pick up a couple of games and go write the script for them. How would I do a how to play this game and then have an example of the session, but it can only be audio only. So I had, for the first couple of sessions, I'd be like, you have to overly describe everything you're doing. And we were doing this in person as well. So I had like one of those H4N Zoom things, popped it in the middle of the table. And I was like, and of course you like, I remember this again, one of the early episodes, so someone's dad comes in and starts making lunch for us. It's just very lovely, but it's really awful for audio. So we had to stop. Somebody was, you know, everyone's always eating and they're like crunch, 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 and then all dice rolling, all that sort of thing. And then it got to pandemic, or just before the pandemic, and I got invited on to do a Call of Cthulhu game that somebody else was hosting. And they said, oh, we're going to record it via Zoom. And I was like, oh, I can do this online in my own time, but also then connect with players in different time zones. And that blew my mind. It's such a simple thing now. But then as a result, I started moving lots more recordings online. And thank God, because as soon as everything started to shut down, I was like, well, I can still plan games, and it can be something that people can look forward to because we're all currently trapped in our houses. But at the same time, it meant I could then start sharing things. So like I could share maps if I wanted to, I could share music if I wanted to easily. and make that immersive environment, you know, making sure people were comfortable with it. And,
totally.
You know, having stuff like accessibility stuff now, it wasn't very good back then, but like subtitles and making sure like, oh, okay, we're about an hour in, let's take a quick bio break. People can go off and stuff. Instead of people, what would normally happen, people would get up in the game and go, oh, or something. We could like, oh, we're just going to take a quick break so we're away from our screens. And as a result, that meant the recording online stuff meant I just learned so much more, not only just about playing games and how to do it online even more so, and actually be able to capture the audio very easily, it turns out, rather than doing various cards and stuff, but actually in a contained thing, but also just making it a better experience for people so that they want to play online and they can do it at their own convenience. And it's not, oh, I've got to trek at, you know, 45 minutes, an hour drive to so-and-so's place. I've got to bring dip. I've got to bring snacks. You know, and then, oh, we're going to leave, you know, at 10:30 because we've got to be back because we've got an early start tomorrow. Whereas everyone's already home. It's a different thing. I know it doesn't work for everyone,
yeah. But
it just made me realize that I can podcast from anywhere. I can play games from anywhere. I can do even improv from anywhere. That's great. And it just made me feel like, okay, I can make this my thing, that have that ownership thing again. And I'm just going to try it out. And if it doesn't work, I can just leave the Zoom room and go, well, that didn't work. No one's ever going to see that recording. Oh, well. And then go and then be in my own house. I don't have to percolate on it when I'm on my way home. So, yeah, that's the podcasting thing and the thing. And I just, like you said, it's such a cool way to connect with people because often than not, people do listen, even if it's just the first 5 minutes. And it's scary. Like I had, I do a lot of solo RPGs as well. So that's when it's just one player, usually yourself, and you create something. A lot of it's usually journaling and usually very reflective because it's just the nature of these solitary games. And I did one called Long Haul 1984, which is about you being a truck driver in the US. Something bad has happened and there's no one else alive. No one knows, no other people in the US. It's just you and the road and the truck. And so I did it. And what I always do, I always put it out on social media and I tagged the creator. The creator listened to all of it and then put a little TikTok video saying like, this is really cool. Here's a snip from it. And she's done all these other things. And I was like, oh my God, he's listened to all these things. And I was like, like it was like imposter syndrome. But of course, these game designers, they don't hear about people playing their games. So as soon as you tag them in it, of course they're going to listen to it. So it was just a way to make friends with game designers who create really fun stories, and they get to go, oh, you did the story about my game? That's so cool. So
yeah.
Anything like that is just amazing.
I bet you they really appreciated that. They were like so psyched to find out that like somebody was playing it and enjoying it. I mean, what's exactly. The point of any of these things that we're making if not for someone to enjoy? So
exactly.
When someone lets you know that they've taken in what you've put out there and like it mattered to them, oh, that's so great. I love it for that person.
Yeah.
Like I love it for you. That you got that feedback, but like I don't know, I'm imagining in my head like this person who like just like is Googling themselves like we all do, and then all of a sudden he's like, what, there's this thing, like, oh, you know, finally someone appreciates my creative output, right? And there's, it's so heartwarming for that person, and then they supported you back, which was so great.
Exactly. I was stunned, but even then I'll get emails. I got one recently of somebody saying, I listened to 2 episodes because I was about to run my own version of this game and I really enjoyed it because it was a one shot with my sister. It was just the two of us and I was just like, we'll just try this game out. And this person was like, I hadn't considered playing that game like this. And as a result of what you did, and I was like, I created my own game. I thought you'd want to see it. And I was like, oh my God. So I was like, well, I'll signal boost it and all that sort of thing. Thank you so much for sharing that with me. Because this person could have gone, those episodes, they were good. All right, I'm just going to create my own thing and not tell me, not give me that like feedback back. And I've had people email me saying, oh, I was looking for a certain system that I wanted to play, but there's not any actual plays out of it. And this is the thing. A lot of the role-playing games I play, I will Google beforehand to see if there's like a how-to play or if there's an actual play. Because that's usually quite helpful. So just to confirm that I've got it right.
Yeah.
And this person was like, I was looking for a game that wasn't necessarily the big Dungeons & Dragons because my daughter, she's still quite young. And I wanted to make sure that she had that creativity because she loves creating stuff. And so this, another system, yours was the only one that came up top of the search, and I listened to it and it's really inspired me to play this game with my daughter. And I was like, yes, more women in games. And I was like, ah, well, let me know. I can help. Here's my cheat sheets. So I was just like, I want Certainly, and that's the thing. I think for me, coming to it so late, it was definitely one of the reasons why I didn't get into role-playing games really early on, I think, because it was always like, oh, well, the men are playing tabletop games. The boys at break, they've got their Warhammer, whatever. Oh, it's not for girls or whatever. Which, and again, at the time, I was like, okay, oh, I like drama, but I wouldn't get it because, oh, it's got dice and math. And then suddenly, I'm like, oh, I can do these things because I am a grown-up and I can choose what I like and don't like.
Yeah.
And I can create these stories. And so I was just... And attitude shift and all that sort of thing. But it was that big realizing moment where I was like, I could do it. If no one else is going to do it, I could do it. And it doesn't matter what gender I am or anything like that. As long as I want to do it, then that's it. Stuff everyone else who says I can't do it.
Yeah. I love that empowerment. I love that you have it for yourself. I love mm-hmm. that you're giving it to other people. And you're right. I mean, yeah, we've certainly been alive during a big cultural shift, I think.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. yeah, when we were younger, there was a lot more, you know, you can't do this if you're, you know, a girl or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Whereas now it's a lot more open. And I think
yeah.
being of the, of the vague generation that we are at, I don't know how old you are, but like we're like in that vague time where like when we saw the change happen. So now when we yes. meet these younger girls, we're like, embrace this, know that yes. you can do this, because
yeah.
I don't know if anyone's telling you not to or not, because we're kind of in a different world, but you can do yep. whatever you want. Like, mm-hmm. and you can create all this on your own.
Mm-hmm,
super
mm-hmm.
cool. I also love this idea that like your whole I not only was you trying to get into learning these different games, but like you're just exploring all the different kinds of role-playing games that people are trying to create out there and mm-hmm. trying to play them and see how it goes. Now, you mm-hmm. seem to be quite a positive person. I don't know if that's what you think of yourself. But I wonder, have you ever had a game that you found and you tried to play it and it turned out to kind of not work? Like this person put it together and it just didn't work. And then if it didn't work and that did happen, did you put it on the internet, or did you go like, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and say that we tried that to ourselves and not put it on the internet because it doesn't really work? Has that ever happened?
Ooh. That's very interesting. There's only been one time though I've abandoned an edit completely, and that was more purely because the people involved, it was just three of us, and one person hadn't sent me their audio file, and neither of them were wearing headphones, and it was just a slog. So that was the only time I abandoned an edit, was more for technical reasons. But I've definitely had games where I've gone, something's not clicking and stuff, and it's very interesting. I don't know about yourself, Amy, if you've ever played any role-playing games or ran role-playing games, but obviously there is this big sort of responsibility when you're the game master, the facilitator, the keeper, whatever you want to be called, that at the end of the day, you've created the world, people play in it, but you are the final adjudicator, and you want to make sure things go, you know, things are working in favor of players, and everything is fair in quotation marks. And a lot of the times, like, there's a lot of pressure to make sure you have the rules right, certainly with Dungeons and Dragons. I know I keep coming back to it, but it is that's one most people will have heard of, people will have experienced of it. And one thing that when I first started out, there was a big worry when I was talking to other female presenting dungeon masters, were like, well, I'm always worried that they're going to know what the monsters are as soon as I describe them, because obviously everyone's read the books. And the great part about playing other role-playing games that no one else has played is that you can make up the rules. And it was so much like a power thing, but there was but at the same time, a lot of my games, because of the improv thing, I do try and just roll off that. And if the team's going in a certain direction, I'm like, okay, we're going to move there. But as a result, as a game master, sometimes I feel, and this is definitely not imposter syndrome per se, but I'm very aware that I talk a lot and I'll be like describing things and all that sort of thing. And then I'll be like, okay, what do you players do? And I'll sit there and it'll be 20 seconds of silence. And I'll be like, oh no, I've ruined it in some way because I've overspoken or something. I did a game recently which had six people online, which is very difficult, I think, because half of them didn't have their cameras on and all that sort of thing. And they don't have to have cameras on, but it's a very different experience, right? Because in person, you can catch certain cues, nonverbal cues. Online, you're working a little bit harder for the GMs and the players. And I'm listening back to the edit just now because I'm just editing it. And whilst the game itself, I do very well. The players, they're not. Yeah, I know. I have to do that now. I'm like, yeah, I actually did a good job. Beforehand, I would be like, no, oh, it was all my fault. And that's the back going, actually, I did a brilliant job. And actually, it's more of a reach for the players because I think they're just like maybe overwhelmed. Maybe they're not necessarily as engaged as they could be. But as a result, what I do in the edit, I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to shorten that combat down to 5 minutes. And it's just cut, and move it up. Whereas in the edit, in the actual game itself, I'll be like, I'll narrow it down to two choices and stuff like that. And eventually I'm like, this person's not getting the game. And that's okay. And at the end, I'll be like, I hope everyone had a good time. Let me know if there's any constructive feedback, etc. And they'll be like, oh, no, I really enjoyed it. Because, as we all know, people who... Maybe it's an improv thing as well, is that we obviously react to people laughing or react to people's faces and stuff. Whereas most people keep it on the inside and keep quiet. And you're like, I need you to be really vocal. I need you to make big choices because otherwise... I won't know if you're there, and I don't know if you've dropped off the call or anything like that. And so those are the bits I found difficult. Whereas it rarely is the game itself, I think, because ultimately you can change the game to be whatever you want. And I always have a disclaimer at the beginning saying, hey, I might get some of the rules wrong because I'm human. Deal with it. Like, yeah. Because ultimately it doesn't matter, as long as the players have fun, and then also as long as I have fun as well.
Yeah.
But it can be quite hard. And I definitely had some sessions where I'm like, that was a lot of work. But I've only once thrown out an edit, and that was all only because of technical difficulties.
Yeah. Now, that's really fascinating. I think it's really smart to use your improv experience to help you develop stuff. Like, meaning, mm-hmm. If the path of the existing story that you're given in the rules doesn't quite continue, or like you said, mm-hmm. the other people like come in with an idea and you're like, okay, this is where we're gonna go, great, I'll follow mm-hmm. along with you, I'm sure that mm-hmm. helps you really greatly. But yeah, it can be tough when people mm-hmm. don't seem to be ready to get involved. I was like, how far are we into this episode? Are people going to be listening? I've had a couple yeah. of interviews where the person just either wasn't in the mode to, yeah. I've only had one ever where we were about 10 minutes into kind of the pre-chat and the person yeah. just went like, I'm sorry, I've had the worst day and I'm really trying right now, but I cannot do this today. Mm-hmm. Can we reschedule? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Sounds perfect. Fine. I'd much rather reschedule and get you when you're in the mode exactly. to chat about stuff mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. sometimes when I'm talking to people and I feel like I really have to pull it from them.
Oh,
right?
It's so hard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. that brings me to the idea of what I was telling you earlier, how I taught like level one improv classes, like mm-hmm. people express themselves. And like you were saying a second ago about the guests that you have on your show, like people express themselves in lots of different ways. And like, mm-hmm. yes, big face theatrical people who are like, let me tell you what I'm feeling. There's that crowd. But then there's the kind of people who, and it's almost in my mind, I always think it's like film acting. It's a lot yes. of like tiny movements and a lot of whispering. Like whenever you watch mm-hmm. movies and you're like, why are they whispering? What's happening? Yeah. Why are they whispering
big,
to each
big
other?
Big mumblers. You're yeah. like, I need subtitles. Come on.
You're like, what are you people doing? But it's like, that's just the way some people express themselves. Like yes. small little bits versus these big, huge moves. And mm-hmm. the hard part is like, especially when you're recording it or when you're putting it online or you're putting it together, you're like, I need the big moves. Could you give me a few big moves?
Yeah. A few big moves just to make sure that you're there, that you're enjoying it. And I agree. I think like the edit I'm thinking about, like it just took them a little while to get into it. And at the end, they were like, oh, I really enjoyed it. And I'm like, oh, I didn't feel like it though. And like you said, it is, I think there's a mixture of like, if you don't have your cameras on or if you don't feel comfortable, then maybe you do shut inside yourself. It's just so much easier in person, like you said, so you can see those little subtle things and you're like, ah, so that's what you're doing. And that felt familiarity as well. Cause I didn't know any of the players before we started the recording either. Aww. It was through a recommendation. So I was like, oh, and then at the end, I was like, well, I hope they had a good afternoon. Oh, well. And then left the Zoom room and then went to make yourself a cup of tea.
Well, hope it worked out. See you later. Bye.
Well, bye.
That's how I feel about teaching corporate improv workshops. I'll like right. teach it and like two people will be like, that was really fun. And everyone else looks kind of confused and weird. And they're like, thanks. And then I leave and I'm like, okay.
Well, two people told me, so I'm all right. Yeah, exactly. You take that energy from them.
Yeah, or I mean, really, it's like I just want to soak into, sometimes I just want to soak into the brains of people who don't think the way I think, a little bit of what I've got going on. Like we were talking about improv earlier and how it has a vaguely religious vibe to it, because it's essentially like an art form that says, you look at the world this way, I'm going to show you a different way to look at the world. And I think that whenever I teach people who are not necessarily planning on being performers, but they want to sort of see into whatever this little bit of art is, I try to give them a little piece of that to kind of understand, you might not live in this world, but here in this world, this is what happens, you know? And then they're like, oh, that's what you people are like? And you're like, yes, we are. Don't be afraid of us. We're just trying to have a good time. That kind of stuff. But like, I really enjoy that. Now, speaking of improv, I would love to know in your journey, like, how did you find improv? You're involved in this great podcast, and you're like leading these groups and you're doing all this work to develop these worlds for everybody. So you're clearly primed. And like you said, even as a child, to be a storyteller, but how did improv find its way in? Because to be honest, just so we're clear, a quick Google of you is all improv. It's yeah, all sorts of talk of your improv experience work. And so, so clearly improv has been a big part of your life as well. Tell me, how did you get into it and how does it connect to the storytelling vibe that you enjoyed from the role-playing games?
So when I first started the first podcast, which is what my rolling, these are the RPG one, I also was like, once I ran a one shot of a system, I'd obviously tag the game designer who would listen to it, and I'd be like, we could do an interview. And I then panicked because I was like, oh god, you know. And then talked to them about it, and then one of the questions I'd always ask is like, what would be their main advice or big tip for someone who was about to run their system, which, you know, is quite good in a sense of like, it's a nice broad thing, they can talk about themselves a little bit if they want to, but also, you know, it's like, oh, that's a really interesting way, I hadn't thought about that. And one person who now I forget, as usual, is of all these stories, I forget which game designer it was, they said, oh, take an improv class because it means you're open up to more things and it's okay if you get the rules wrong. And their game was very rules light, I seem to remember as well. So I was like, that's a great idea. And it sort of hit me after the interview. I was like, I'm in London. There must be an improv. And I searched and obviously like, there is.
There must be.
And then there's one starting in 2 weeks. That's an 8-week course. Okay. Oh, I've booked on it. And then I then continued, like, I just plunged myself in at the deep end. And as someone who does have social anxiety, I was there beforehand, like 20 minutes beforehand, because I'm super early. And I'm like, this is the worst decision I've ever made. And then other people, and then obviously 10 minutes later, loads of other socially awkward people going, is this where the improv is? And you're like, oh, good, yes. And then after that, I just was doing it like every time a course finished, there'd be the next level, you know, all different levels and stuff. And I got to the final level 4, Hoopla, whatever. You know, we've gone from short form scenes, long form, and we were about to do like our fight. We're like 1 week away from the show, and I was, you know, it was great. I was enjoying myself. Everything was great, and then it was March 2020, and everything shut down. And of course, there's that moment where you're like, am I not an improviser? Which is such a stupid first world problem. And then the next week, Steve Rowe from Hoopla was like, I'm going to try online improv drop-ins. If anyone wants to join me, come. And I was like, sod it, I'll try it. And then as a result, I just started using improv as a way to, okay, today's Tuesday, it's improv day. And then just started doing more and more classes online, started meeting people and seeing the same faces. Because obviously, again, I know it's, to do online improv, you know, needing certain things like, you know, certain fast internet or any of these things to at least access it. And I was just super grateful for it because that meant I could experience this, something I loved, in a different format. And, you know, meeting people and keeping that connection with people. And I know that online improv isn't something for everyone. I know some people who just was like, I don't want to do it at all. And then I've gone back to it just recently. But for me, it sort of cemented what I learned. And it meant I could try so many brand new things. And then coming back into like this now sort of hybrid thing, I've been to my first festival this year. I went to the Edinburgh Improv Festival, and I'd performed with people I'd never performed with before. I went to see all their shows. I did classes in person for the first time since the pandemic. And I was just like, I just realized that how much I enjoy that, and giving myself, like, this is what I spend my sort of bit of income on anything else. It's not clothes, not food really. It's improv. Just being able to teach myself and then being able to do stuff. And I don't actually perform that much. I did a lot of online stuff, and unfortunately I know it's sort of tailing off a little bit because people are going back to it. But it's just one of those things where I'm like, I can always just go and perform. And I, you know, had teams and stuff, and we perform regularly. And again, unfortunately, COVID, people are back to work and back into more fixed structures and stuff. But I'm always like, I just want to try it out and go to a jam, or go try with a team. If people will have me and want me, and then just have fun and learn new styles and learn new structures and formats, and just give it a go. Because honestly, it's such a way to connect with people who, like you were saying, are on the same level as you, in a sense of like, you like improv? Great, come in to this little tiny rehearsal room. Okay, we're all frogs. Excellent. You know, I can get into that. But also, it's so interesting to actually see it from other people. Like, oh, this person, certainly in London, we have a lot of people in the financial district that come and do improv. But we also have teachers. We also have people who are just office workers. We have people from outside London who commute in to do these courses. And I was just like, actually, I'm meeting a lot more people than I would normally. I consider them all friends now from, like, just doing online stuff. But it's just like, I know this person. Before, it would be like, again, going back to that whole like 18 years thing, you seem to be like, okay, your uni friends, your school friends, your work friends, and then maybe some other people if you've got hobbies. And then hobbies sort of like can be so flexible and sort of changeable and stuff that you might lose people. Whereas I'm always like, well, in improv, I can connect with people, you know, who want to, who like the same things, and we can keep that connection going. We can, again, social media has been great in that sense, because you can just send people an email, you can send people a WhatsApp or anything like that. And I just, for me, it's a big part of my support network. It's something that I can do no matter what. But also, it gets me that chance to get that little performer out of me who never did it and regrets not doing it in that first 18-year cycle. But actually, I feel so much better now, because I don't have, I would say, I mean, I still have it in the sense, I don't have that sort of like anxiety to go, oh, but what if I'm not good enough? I'm like, I've just arrived, and the fact I'm here is amazing, and you should all be glad. Brilliant. Excellent. I will get the first round at the bar, you know, like, hooray! You know, and I just want to bring that energy to it. That it's not about like, oh, I hope I'm good enough. I'm like, I am here. That is good enough for you guys.
I want you to take this exact thing that you're thinking of right now and use that when you first move to Iowa.
Oh,
like,
brilliant.
That vibe of that. Like, well, I'm here. You guys are going to love it. I'll buy the first round.
Yes,
because
I'll
then they're
that.
Like, hey, she's fun.
Hey,
oh,
wait, she's great. She's yeah. great. Yeah.
At the end of the day, the number one thing that has gotten me through most scenarios is I walk in and tell everyone how happy they are to see me. Like I just come yes. in and I'm like, you guys, I'm here. Who's psyched? I know I am. You guys should be too. And then like, they're just amused. So even if they're like, who is this girl? They're I just know. Like, she's told me to be happy she was there. Like, what? Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. There's a certain thing.
It's weird because I talked to someone the other day, and he says, it's very interesting because you have this sort of persona, this like, you're glad that I'm here and I was good in that thing, but you're not like that at all. And I'm like, I'm not. Like, I big up this egotistical version of myself, because frankly, like, it's because I'm just like, for me, it's so ridiculous that this person who has very bad social anxiety at times, who, you know, who just, you know, will do what she can. But then it's like, if I say this, everyone, certainly because we're all British polite people in my current community, they'd be like, what? And I'm like, I thought so. and it's just funny because it's so ridiculous that I would say something like that, which doesn't hurt people, hopefully, and is sensitive. And I'm just very aware of that. I'm just like, because otherwise we're all sat in silence and then we're waiting for people to go like slap their knees and go, right, well, I should have gone half an hour ago. And I'm just like, oh, you know, it just to have that communication and just to be bombastic characters, because otherwise we're just these boring people in offices who have to deal with academics who can't read scripts and can't look into the camera and then don't want to listen back to it in case they look bad on it.
Yeah.
They never do look bad. They look fine. They look scared because they can't remember the words. That's the only thing.
There are famous, very attractive movie stars that won't watch themselves in movies, though. So there are people who you think of as like, oh, my God, I could stare at that face every day of my life. And they're like, I've never seen a movie with me in it. what do I want to look at this? And you're like, we all do, you know, yeah. And, but to bring it back to your, like the egotistical character, sometimes I think, and also I feel like it totally feeds into, you're like, that's new to who I am. But P.S. it totally is, because I yeah. love the part in your story where you're like, there was a game and that needed a leader. That's me. I will be the person who is in charge of this. And the thing about being a leader is a lot of times you have to take people by surprise, because like people want to be led, especially in a scenario where like you really are like the leader of this, you know, DM, you're DMing this, event, or like you're, the leader in a class or something. Like you want to put people at ease by being like, nobody could be weirder than me. So let me show you what the options are. There's this wackiness and there's you guys. What do you think? And they're like, well, maybe I'll get there, but I'm not there yet. And it also, like, certainly for me, I'm a lady in my 40s. I lean into wacky aunt vibe everywhere I go, because it's just easier. And then people like give me what I want and don't ask questions. Like if I'm just if I'm just like super direct, but also kind of kooky, they're like, oh, look, she's wild. I was like, you can just call me Aunt Amy. All right. Give me that thing. Okay. See you later, everybody. The other thing is, number one, it's a great leadership setup, right? People love hanging out with you, yet they do what you say, and they like think it's the right move. You're like, why wouldn't I do what she told me to? She just wanted to have a good time, right? But then there's also brightening people's days. Do you know how many people are just sort of miserable in their little moments of life? Like you go in. So whenever I go to anywhere, really, anywhere. Like my, you know, the person checking me out at Target, or like I go to the into the gas station to pay for gas, or, you know, any little interaction that I have, I always try to be wacky and kooky so that that person either has a fun story or just a fun moment for their day where it, like, they weren't thinking about whatever sad thing that's going on in their own life. That they're like focused on, like, Janine doesn't love me anymore. And I'm all like, hey guys, what's going on? Are you wearing a clown wig? Oh, that's just your hair. I love it. Okay, see you later. And then they're like, what was that? Like, I prefer to live my life as a Kristen Wiig character pretty much everywhere, because it really works out for me. And and people just I feel like it's the right move. And also you're right, like I put myself out there in this big, loud, proud way, but like when I get home, I'm always like, oh God, everybody was like, who is that weird lady? And then the voice quietly in the background goes, that was your point. You're the weird lady. It's all right.
Yeah, it's,
and I'm
it's
like,
okay,
oh yeah, 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 that's right. That's right. That was my effort. I wanted to be weird lady.
Yeah, that's my cue. Yeah.
It's the right plan. Yeah. And it's like, what's more fun than being like weird Aunt Amy? Like, yes, I'm here for you. Like,
I feel like I am like weird Aunt Fiona, but to my friends who currently don't have children. But I am already at weird Aunt Fiona. And they're like, oh, there's Fiona again. What? Oh, she's inviting us to improv. Well, best of luck, Fiona. I'm like, okay, it's fine. You don't have to come, but I'm going to keep posting about it until eventually one of you comes. I don't, who's it going to be? Who's going to, I volunteer as tribute, you know? And then they go, I had a good time. I was like, exactly. Are you going to come again? No. Okay.
Well, you know, the hoi polloi, they don't know how to live their lives. Like I said before, they just have little drab gray existences, and we're the wild, fun rainbows that dance in front of them. And, you know, that's I'll take it. It seems fine. I'd rather live my life of wild, vibrant, silly color than just be like, I guess this is the way it is. Super sad Eeyore. Nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it, right? Absolutely not. So fun. You mentioned you took your improv classes at Hoopla. Is that the name of the theater? Awesome.
Yeah.
Hoopla, yeah. So fun. Are you still connected with that community in the post-pandemic world?
Yeah, I've been doing a couple of courses in person and online with them just now.
Nice.
I am trying to be like, can't just go to one school. I've got to, we were talking about this before, like I am going to try and do other schools and stuff, but it just has to line up with my schedule. Like,
sure,
the world does revolve around me. But it's just
well,
trying to
yours does.
Yeah, mine does. But I am trying to be more aware and like try and take more stuff from that, because I know it's like I was saying that you don't want to just a way just to learn new things. And I think I will say, and you know, I'm sure loads of your listeners and loads of people you've interviewed have been like, "Oh, Hoopla's great." I will say that it's one of the most rewarding communities in the sense of like it was so welcoming. I know it's very like easy to say, "Oh, you don't have to be funny, clever, or any of these things. Just be obvious." But that comes from the top down in that structure. I think all the teachers I've had there have been super warm, super kind, just super lovely to be a part of, and they've, you know, and I followed them into other things. I've been to see them their shows, and it's like now it's kind of weird again. I'm like, oh, I'm friends with some of them, and then I'll meet them at a barbecue, and I'm like, but you taught me this class, and again, that's me breaking down that whole. Not stigma, but that whole sort of cultural thing in my head saying, well, we can't be friends because you taught me this thing. But I'm like, oh, improv, it's so fluid. It's so funny that you could be friends with people, you could perform with them. And your old teacher turns around to you and goes, I really enjoyed that scene. And you go, oh, they noticed me in that scene. That was great. And yeah, from that point, I think this Hoopla, if anyone is starting improv or wants to take a class with it, I 100% would recommend. I don't know if they are doing online stuff anymore, but I really hope they do it again, because it was such a lifesaver for me in that early pandemic when I was like, I don't know what, my whole world shattered in 48 hours because I was very, I didn't realize how much of an extrovert I was going out and doing things, because I was, you know, I was into theater, I'd go see the theater by myself, I'd go see cinema by myself, because even when you're trying to organize diaries as adults, it's bloody difficult. So I was like, I don't have time. I'm going to do it myself. Because otherwise I'd just be sat at home, probably being sad. So I'm very grateful to Steve Rowe, who was one of the founders of Hoopla, who was like, I'm going to try this thing. And I was like, I am here to support you, Steve Rowe. And I will be here. I will be at every online drop-in on a Tuesday and say hello. And it was very lovely to meet him in person. And he was like, Fiona, online improv. And I was like, yes, I remembered.
I love it. Yeah, I've been taking this writing class or being part of this writer's group for 2 years. And the person who runs it, the leader, is here in the same town as me. And it was 2 years of us online. And then we finally met in person. And it was so crazy to be like, oh my God, you exist. And the idea of how close we lived. Like, I couldn't believe how crazy, because we'd be online and a few people were in Austin, but a few people were other places. And we'd just be like, with the Austin people would be like, wait, where are you? Oh, I'm in the East. Oh, really? I'm in Central. Oh, my God. And then later when I went over to her house, she taught a workshop in person. And I was like, I'm going to meet her. I'm going to take it. And I like went over there and was like, it was so amazing to finally connect.
Cool. Yeah.
To these like great people who did this work for us, that like prepared, mm-hmm. like made this space for us at a time when we needed a space.
100%.
And like that was, I mean, it, so wonderful of every person. And like you said earlier, like I appreciate that there are people that didn't want to do online improv. No. I get it. Like sometimes it's the physical, visceral, in the room vibe, right, that you want. And I get it. I like that too. That's why I like talking to large groups of people. Like I always go, over 200 people, if I can talk to them all at once. Yes. Yes. The more people over 200, I'm into it, because I like the idea of staring at this mass of people and imagining they're one person that I'm talking to. Oh, and, wow. And so like that gives me energy. I love doing that, because mm-hmm. people are always like, I'll always volunteer to host at weird corporate events. Like I've gone to podcast festivals and I'm like, oh, can I MC this thing? And they're like, yeah, nobody wants to MC. And I was like, yeah, let me do it. Because I just want to talk to, that's what gives me the excitement in person, right? Mm-hmm. But I love mm-hmm. the online improv, because I just, in my mind, it was different. And it was like a different vibe. We were able to open doors across the world to one another. And that in and of itself was like, this is amazing. I'm so happy that we get to be friends. I mean, like even the workshops that we're in together, where it's like the people are all over the world in this workshop and we meet every few weeks. Like, I love it. I love the fact that I get to check in with everybody about like, and we talk about the nature around us is super fun, because it's such a like, let's connect to the world and connect to the world that other people are experiencing. And so these online connections are different, but they for me, allow me to see the world in a, like, the global view that I now have, that I understand of the way things happen is mm-hmm. insane. Like, I did not see the world the same mm-hmm. way as I do now. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, the performance of improv or anything online, whether you like to watch it or be part of it, even if you're not into it, it is a valid, interesting art. It is yes. a wonderful new collaborative means. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of all of the improv duos that never met, or like mm-hmm. like they just do mm-hmm. it on Zoom, or like people who created whole shows that are like across the world from one another, right? Like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like one of my favorites, there was a show, and I can't even remember the name of the show, but Joe Bill and Balasri Viswanathan were doing this wonderful, like, improv show with the two of them, and they were like across the world from each other, and they would mm-hmm. like chat about therapy topics and then do improv, and it was like I love that this Amazing. Is happening. I love that they were like, let's bond over this particular specific thing, like mm-hmm. and just get into it, and it was like, this is so fun, like mm-hmm. that we get to do that. I mean, like, it, again, even just us being friends, like, yes, and yeah. now I'm all like, ooh, you're going to be in my time zone. It's going to be yes. great. I was like, you can call me at regular times and we'll yes. be at the same time. It'll be great. Whatever I can do to help, I am there for you. But like this world has been so amazing, and I'm so glad that you are able to connect with the mm-hmm. online improv, mm-hmm. and we get to make these friends. You know, there's yes. there's ups and downs to what has happened, and I'm just happy that we get to now be thankful to these creative artists that were strong enough to yeah. make these rooms for us to be in. You know, mm-hmm. thanks to Steve, thanks to my writing teacher Natalie, like doing that work for us helped mm-hmm. us get to a place where now we can get back into our own spaces that we create for other people.
Exactly.
So interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So I have one final question for you. I want to ask you, what are you doing for yourself to fill up your own creative cup? Like, what are you doing? And it doesn't have to be like, this is what I'm performing right now, or this mm-hmm. is what my new creative project is. But as we all have sort of figured out, there's the output of creativity, and then there's the receiving in of other stuff. Like, are you going mm-hmm. to see plays right now? Are you mm-hmm. listening to music? Are you playing a particular video game? What's the thing that's reinvigorating your own creative spirit?
Oh, that's such a good question, because I feel like, as always, it's not one thing. So I'm like, pick up shiny thing and go. One thing I am loving... And it is a podcast. it's called, and it, I don't know how I even really found out about it. Again, it must have been like an Instagram reel or something like that. But it's two Australians called Tony and Ryan. And they're just two Australians, like both into audio stuff. One was a radio host and one was an audio engineer. And they met during, just before the pandemic. And then obviously the pandemic stuff happened. They were like, we're quite funny. Let's do a podcast together. And okay, the content isn't necessarily highbrow. But what I love about it is that they have a lot of fun together. And that's always been the thing to me, is listening in. I always listen to podcasts when I go to sleep as well. And the best ones are ones that they're all chatting away and they're having a laugh and stuff. And I'm just like everyone's happy and I'm now going to sleep through it. But I've been going through their back catalog, and it's just, you know, the stories, and they started podcasting like last September or something like that. And they put out like 3 short episodes a week and all that sort of thing. And wow. And also, I would say they're not traditionally what you would expect, maybe, of like streamers or podcasters. Both of them are plus size. Both of them have, you know, big hair and all that sort of thing. And they're just, but they don't care. And they're very much very good at, like, if there's a topic that comes up, that they're both like, they're, you know, like, for example, they're like, oh, they talk about exercise. You're like, you know what? Whatever you want. Don't care. Whatever. You know, and it's, but they do it in such a way that's very loving and not judgmental and stuff. But they'll also do stuff like, they'll do stuff which is like things you can say at this location but also in the bedroom, and they'll just make each other laugh, and it's so rude sometimes. I have to definitely listen to it with my headphones on, but then I just laugh, and it just I think, like, the, you know, like, it is what it is. I will say, big content warning, so it's not, definitely not safe for work, but it will make you laugh, because it's just nice to hear people just talk, and there's no agenda, there's no nothing like, oh, we're going to sell you all these things. It's just, they're bite-sized stuff, so a lot of the times it can repeat itself. But it actually just feels nice just to have two people who clearly love each other very well as and really love their jobs and love like being silly together. And so like I said, they did to do the sort of the naughty innuendo ones. They'll tell a story, which obviously leads up to something, and then obviously it's revealed and they're like, nah, mate, that's not normal. And you're like, yeah, I don't think that's normal either. You know? And then they always end their podcast on, you'd love to see it. And usually is that something that makes, like, it's a wholesome thing, perhaps. And they're like, I saw this meme. Or it could be something that made them laugh. And it, again, like, it's like a 20-minute episode and you can blast through them. And I think it's just something that makes me joy that if they can make a podcast on their personality, like being fun, the very funny people, just living their lives as this job. And then obviously now going on to greater things because I think they've been picked up by Spotify. Like, nice. I can do that, you know. I can do these things and stuff. And I've done stuff for like a Rooster Teeth. I've done a couple of stuff for them, but in passing this in Austin, and they keep saying, "When are you coming to the US?" And I'm like, "ASAP! If you need me, please let me know." Like rather than
amazing
things. So like I'm always appreciative of listening to those things, which are not necessarily traditional like actual play podcasts or anything role playing. But if I listen to something and I can hear that the hosts are having a good time, and the same with improv as well, if I can see them having a good time, and I know there's that whole sort of thing like, oh, if you're making someone corpse laughing or something like that, then oh, if you're having too much of a fun time, I love it when I see people enjoying the space between people because it makes me want to be in the room with them and share that experience, even if it's indirectly as an audience member. So yeah, that's what's been overfilling my cup, I guess. Yeah.
What's the name of the podcast?
It's simply called Tony and Ryan Podcast. That's all it's called. Yeah, I know.
That's basic, so really. Funny. very, very simple.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. Now, I think that there's something wonderful about enjoying somebody else having a good time, you know? And it definitely opens yourself up, like when you were saying in the podcast class that you took, that they said, like, you are what you bring to it is what makes it special. Clearly, mm-hmm. what Tony and Ryan are bringing to this conversation is what makes it special. I'm sure there's other podcasts where people are like just making jokes, but it connects with you in this, like, something about their personalities connects with you and you're super into it. Like, I have a few podcasts I listen to a lot. There was a couple that I listened to for a long time, and then I felt like me and the host's vibes diverged in a way that I was like, I don't love him as much anymore. Like, he's different. I appreciate it's like he's gone through this in his life and now his point of view is XYZ and I just don't get that anymore. So I don't listen to it happen anymore. That's not to say that like I don't tell other people, listen to that podcast. It's great. Really, if Absolutely. You're into this kind of thing, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's something for everybody. And the beauty of there being millions of podcasts is that you can just find these tiny niche groups that are making something and you're like, I love these people. Like everything that they're doing is great. And the work that they put in is so fun. Mm-hmm. And like, they make me happy. There's nothing wrong with being happy.
No, I agree. Man. Totally.
Oh, whatever makes you happy, do it. Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Fiona, thank you so much for being on the podcast with me and chatting with me about all sorts of parts of your journey and just storytelling in general. It's been a great day chatting with you.
Yeah, I know you're happy to be here with me, so it's all fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm also happy to be here with you, so that's all fine. We're both way.
Yeah. I mean, it does help that we like met each other in a different context and enjoyed each other's company, and then we're like, oh, wait, we should bring this to the podcast world that we've got going. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, so fun. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and I really appreciate you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.